Couldn't ask for three better reviews than that, thank you. Very perceptive. They were right in their criticisms as well as their praises. And I'm actually not going to talk about my book, except to say I have five copies up there. Anyone half my age, but preferably poor and still in school, I'll give you one to prove that the virtue side. What I actually want to talk about is the Philadelphia Society and you and why you're here. The Philadelphia Society has a new book of old speeches. And I was re-looking at one that my mentor, Frank Meyer, gave in 1965 before this organization. And it struck me so strongly of how similar it is to our problem today as long ago, probably majority here weren't even around then, right? I was so lucky. I was born, lived in New York, New York City, and this guy named Buckley came over to St. John's University, where I was going to school, and that darn guy changed my life. And then a little later, I met Frank Meyer, and I became a fusionist. The fusionist thing is really, in this 1965 essay, Frank Meyer, the inventor of fusionism, called it, quote, an inelegant and hideous name, unquote. All right? And of course, it was given to his way of thinking by an opponent, which is not unusual. You know, capitalism was given by Marx. Christianity was given by one of St. Paul's critics. At least that's the best I read it. Often the names are given and you can't change them. There are all kinds of people in Christianity want to change you know, what you call it, but we can't do it. Everybody hates this term fusionism, all right? But we can't get rid of it. All right, what is it? The fundamental thing, and it's driven me crazy for these past 100 years I've been around. Making the distinction between fusionism as a political coalition and fusionism as a philosophy. They're totally different, right? 99.9 times somebody uses the term fusionism, they're talking about politics. They're talking about a political coalition between libertarians and traditionalists. And that is a legitimate use of the term. But it confuses when you're trying to talk about fusionism as a philosophy. And I've been trying to say that for the last 50 years or whatever. And interestingly, Reason Magazine, where you might not expect it, its managing editor, who Dan mentioned, we have this group that discusses politics, philosophy mostly, not politics. But anyway, her name's Stephanie Slade. She kind of did it better than I've tried to do it in 50 years, all right? Young woman really embarrassed me. She said, fusionism, properly understood, is not a marriage of two groups. It's a marriage of two value sets. A fusionist is someone who sees both liberty in the classic sense of freedom from aggression, coercion, and fraud, and virtue in the Judeo-Christian sense of submission to God's command as important. Fusionism, therefore, is a distinct philosophical orientation into itself. What's more, it has historically been the dominant orientation on the American right. Both. Passionately for both. Tell me to choose, I'll only choose if I have to. If circumstances force it. I love freedom, I love tradition, this tradition of the West. And Frank was so good about talking about, going past this traditionalism and freedom concept. We talk about it so much and relate it to European liberalism and conservatism. But Frank said in this 1965 article, America went behind both of these. Actually, remember, their constitution is before this, all right? It's important to put it in context. We went around this problem that so wrapped up Europe. Yes, it came from Magna Carta and that whole tradition, but it broke. Remember, England did eventually become a divine right monarchy, all right? He says we went behind it and kept that older tradition in a new and much more vibrant form. Now, why do I say that this sounds, this piece sounds familiar? Notice the year, it's 1965. What disaster happened to conservatives in 1965? Morton? 1964 presidential election, and the other side ends up with two-thirds in both houses of Congress, president, a court, so left wing, at least as we saw it. I think our first talk here got me a little confused, but we got wiped out, all right? Sent me back to graduate school. I said, I know nothing, all right? Changed the whole trajectory of where I was going in political. But what does he say? Meyer says, you know, we had an enormous change in politics. When I went to graduate school, by the way, the main book was The End of Ideology, which meant everybody was a progressive, all right? There were no conservatives. Where did this conservatism come from? You know what's amazing? And this is what I want each one of you, that one person wrote an academic book, and not even in his home country. He published it in the middle of a war. One guy who happened to be running a magazine called Reader's Digest read it and said, hey, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. He serialized it. Millions and millions of people read this thing, including Buckley and Meyer, and both of them gave credit to that's what changed them. one book. All right? One courageous person who was willing to make the decision, and Buckley and then Meyer. I mean, that, there was no real conservative. There was some right and stuff, but there was no real conservative with a kind of a relatively common agreement there. And as you'll see in the book, I mean, and most of you probably know, is that, I mean, Hayek was not a believer, but he said we needed that belief to support what we do. All right. So, but here's Meyer now in 1965. He said, the problem is we started off with all this hope, and it just took off, and we took over the Republican Party, we nominated a president, and everything seemed changed. There was an alive movement on the right. But he said, today, you know, we have, quote, a lamentable intellectual thinness. We're simply chanting neat slogans, sneering at opponent rather than deepening our understanding. That sound kind of familiar, what's going on? We have, my last book before this, when I said it's all over with George W. Bush, I mean, put through a new entitlement program. You know, the 50th anniversary of American Conservative Union, I was the vice chairman. We invited George W. Bush over. He purposely gave a left-wing speech telling about how he put in a new entitlement, nationalized education. You know, we already have got everybody educated. 10 years ago is when his thing was going to explode. It was a funny situation, actually, because I was sitting there, and everybody, it's not everybody, obviously a lot of people were there, didn't, but almost everybody is up clapping for him when he passes the new entitlement program, and all the horrible things he did. But my friend Bob Novak, a top journalist at the time, was sitting at the next table and happened to notice I wasn't standing up when everyone else is. The next morning, he publishes in his nationally syndicated column, the biggest at the time, it says, the conservative leader won't stand up for the President of the United States. Anyway, I think we've been kind of going on slogans for a long time. We need to get back and be serious about it. But there's some good news in this. 1965 was disastrous, and they came in, and basically the conservative coalition in Congress had stopped the New Deal from 1938 to 1965. They came in with two-thirds majorities, and they passed everything that completed the New Deal into a democratic socialist system, which is basically what we have, with a lot less than Europe, but we're trying hard to catch up. I think we have the possibility of that, maybe even as soon as 2024. What they're doing can't work. It just can't work. It's been the bane of my life. I can't explain that government doesn't work. Centralization does not work. Ludwig von Mises is, in my opinion, the best thing he wrote, a little book called Bureaucracy. And he says, it's simple why public sector is so less efficient than the private sector. In the private sector, you can have 10 levels, 20 levels of organization, and all you got to do is go down and look, is this group making a profit? Is that making a profit? right? And if they aren't, you get rid of them or do something dramatic. Now, what happens in the government? Exactly when you try to go down and see what they're doing, if you do, you can find out that they're not doing. What do? You don't get rid of it. You spend more money on it, right? Doing the same thing, basically. And of course, the only way they can communicate is called the performance appraisal system, which I helped develop It worked a little bit, huh? Did someone say something? No. Oh. Where was I?
Performance
rating. Nobody thinks it works, all right? Right? They don't rate it each other. Everybody passes it high. So the one instrument they have that allows them to go through gives them the wrong advice. And even if they gave them the right advice, they could do the wrong thing. But in any event, it can't work. And I think it's going to fail. Now, as Dan mentioned, he thinks I'm optimistic. I try to keep a little stiff upper lip in the book, but I'm not necessarily optimistic. It could go 100% the bad way. We could get the wrong person up in front in 2024 and have all that power and abuse it. But anyway, I think that's the opportunity that may come. But where we are today, it seems to me, is very important. We know that the next 3 years or whatever it is, certainly the next couple of years, we're not going to be able to do very much. They're in charge of Congress, and I think we might pick up control of Congress in 2 years, they still have the presidency, and they basically will ignore Congress anyway. That, to me, gives us the real opportunity, the same opportunity this organization had back in 1965. It's time for us to think, to go back and think. It was so encouraging to hear the other day about these higher education institutions they're talking about and the ones that already exist. That's what we need to do. Dr. Canales, read. When we were in New York, the Young Americans for Freedom and the local groups up there, they had read everything. People carried around the Constitution of Liberty, and several gave, that's why they became conservatives. I mean, I suggest two things. One, go back and do kind of what we're doing in Washington. Get a bunch of conservatives, they all don't have to agree on anything, and discuss it and talk it. You'd be surprised how much you can learn and how much you can get done doing that. And you can do that at your thing. We just have a dinner and we sit around and we talk from many different... And the second thing is this organization. Keep it going like you did. Thanks for listening.